So I'm going to be talking probably for 25 minutes, half an hour. So do sit more comfortably if you're sort of currently sitting in a meditation posture, and do get a chair if that feels more comfortable as well. And if you get uncomfortable, just move and get a chair while I'm talking. Okay, thank you, Shivanaga. What a lovely introduction. And thank you very much for asking me to give this talk. Thank you very much to Hannah Atkinson, who is hopefully having a wonderful time in Paris as I speak. She wrote me a very lovely email asking me to give this talk, which would have been hard to say no to. So, Okay, so I'm going to be talking about pleasure and pain. I'm going to be talking about the worldly winds. I'm always wondering if I can do it without my glasses. So I'm just going to give a quick recap on what the worldly winds actually are. So as Shivanaga said, you've had three talks so far. This is the final one. So there are eight worldly winds in Buddhist teaching, and they're basically a teaching on how we create suffering in our lives. There are eight of them. They come in four pairs. So they're praise and blame, gain and loss, fame and infamy, and pleasure and pain. Generally speaking, we crave one of the pair and we have an aversion to the other. We want to repeat and we want to avoid. So, you know, we want gain, we don't want loss. We're sort of very happy to have praise, but often very uncomfortable with blame. And so these worldly winds, they blow through our lives. They will be present to a lesser or greater extent to all of us at different times. And what the teaching tells us is the worldly winds in themselves are not the cause of our suffering. It's our response to them that causes the additional stress, the tension, the suffering. And I really like the use of the word winds. We all know what it feels like to be in a strong wind and how much that can affect you. What a force it can be. And, you know, winds shape our world geographically. You know, they kind of move, shift coastlines and all sorts of things. And in the same way, in a way, kind of, I see the worldly winds as sort of, they can shape our mind in the way that they kind of blow through our experience. I'll talk a bit more about that later. But I was listening to a talk by Vijaya Shri, who's an order member down in Croydon. She was introducing the worldly winds. And she was talking about, you know, how on coastlines there's often a prevailing wind. So there's a wind that very strongly blows from one particular direction a lot. And she talks about the trees you can sometimes see on those coastlines and how they kind of grow a bit like that, sort of bending with the direction of the wind that's been kind of pummeling them. I really like this image. So this evening, I'm talking about pleasure and pain in the worldly winds, just to let people who've just come in know that that's what I'm doing, pleasure and pain. And I found myself saying to people, oh, I've been asked to give a talk on pleasure and pain. Yeah, I feel very well qualified to do that. You know, the pain, maybe not so much the pleasure. And I realized, in a way, how strongly I've become identified with the pain in my life. So I have chronic, ongoing physical pain. I get back pain and knee pain, which has really limited my life for quite a number of years now. And I also work with depression. And in a way, you know, I feel like that wind of pain has been blowing quite strongly. And maybe I'm a bit like this. Like, I do strongly identify with those experiences. So, pleasure and pain. Let's have a look at them. Starting with pleasure. To be clear, Buddhist teaching tells us there's nothing wrong with pleasure in itself. Pleasure and beauty, they're a part of our experience. Quite naturally. It's the wanting more of it that gives us problems. So Bhante Sangharakshita, the man who founded this movement, Sri Ratna movement, in a book he wrote called Know Your Mind, describes pleasure as that which one wants to feel again, and it is that very wanting it again which changes pleasure to pain. I'm just going to say that again. Pleasure, that which one wants to feel again, and it is that very wanting it again which changes pleasure to pain. Thinking of an example, I mean, I could think of a lot of examples for this, but it often comes down to chocolate for me. So, surprise. But, you know, I can find myself with a square of chocolate in my mouth and it's tasting quite nice. And often in our house, we've got, there's a bar of chocolate that's being shared. And before, maybe I haven't even had the chocolate in my mouth for that long, I'm thinking, am I going to get another square? Is there going to be enough left? I'm kind of already out of the experience of tasting it and wanting something else, kind of more than the actual experience that I'm having. And the nature of pleasurable experience is that it is impermanent. The most delicious food becomes too much after a while. A lovely warm bath goes cold. Books that we love reading come to an end. And that's just kind of how it is. But it's the wanting that at some level for that not to happen that gives us problems. And what about pain? So Buddhism teaches us that pain, or dukkha, dukkha is a Pali word, which is the language that was around at the time of the Buddha, and it translates into sort of unsatisfactoriness. So pain, dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, is an integral part of our lives in this world. Physical pain, emotional pain, in general, we don't want it. We will go to considerable lengths to block it out, to deny it, to avoid it. But the truth is, at some point, we will all experience pain. Even if we're generally physically and mentally well, we will experience the pains of old age, sickness, of death. And, you know, the simple emotional discomfort of not getting what we want, which can happen so many times in the course of just one day, that can cause us a lot of dukkha, a lot of pain. Vajragupta, in his book on the worldly winds, which I haven't brought with me, but I think a lot of people have based their talks on his book. It's a very good book. Currently out of stock in the bookshop, unfortunately. I think probably because of this series on the talks. Back in soon. Anyway, Vajragupta says, you know, what we tend to do when we experience pain is to worry about it, to complain, to feel bitter about it. And he says it's this resistance, the emotional activity that we can focus the energy around the painful experience that can make us feel worse. Resistance leads to tension, which makes things more painful. For example, there's a particular place in my back down here where if I kind of experience some pain there, some physical pain, because of past experiences and just generally a kind of pattern my mind's got into, I tense up like this. I get a lot of fear around that pain, like what's going to happen now? And that just makes the experience worse. It makes the pain more painful. And then very quickly following that, the thoughts and stories that arise in my mind. So my go-to phrases are, I can't cope, I deserve this, I don't deserve this, I need to do more, I'm not enough, the pain is unbearable, what am I doing wrong? And yeah, I mean, I think they say in themselves the kind of additional suffering they're going to be adding to the original experience. And we can also get into avoidance through distraction. And this is where addictions can stem from. Anything for some pleasure to take our minds off the pain. I have to say I consider myself a master of this. I've tried various things over the years, ranging from alcohol, smoking, sugar, endless iPlayer. And I noticed what my tendency to try and stuff it down, to not feel it by kind of deadening it in a way. But it's interesting, I was reading some book by Vijayamala, who's an automator who's written a lot about pain. And she said that she realized that when she was in pain, she'd pick a fight. She'd cause an argument of some kind. So I think, you know, everyone's got different ways of reacting, possibly, to their experience of pain. And my experience has been that none of these distractions, what I tell myself are kind of pleasures, really work. And indeed, taken to excess, they make things considerably worse than they originally were. And then obviously the nature of addiction is it's diminishing returns. It's never enough. You need more. And all the time the pain is still there underneath. Kind of trying to mask it something, but it's still there. So both these strategies, for want of a better word, are what's termed as second arrow suffering. We have our basic experience, like the pain in our back, maybe an uncomfortable feeling in our belly that we're not too sure about. And the mind can come in with its stories. We can start tensing and running and blocking. And in that, we're piling a whole lot of further suffering in, a second arrow, a third arrow, a fourth arrow, onto what is our kind of original painful experience. So this tends to be how we, in varying degrees, respond to pain and pleasure. So pain, we want to avoid. Pleasure, we crave more of it, which becomes in itself painful. What a pickle, I've written here. It's a ridiculous state of affairs. What is to be done? I'm going to now take a dramatic pause with here. So, there is a Dharma door for each of the pairs of the worldly winds. A Dharma door is like, it's a practice. It's a way of seeing the truth in a situation, an antidote, you could say, for our habitual patterns that keep us trapped in our automatic responses. You know, we can be so buffeted about, again, winds is quite a good word, and oscillating between extremes, there's lots of toing and froing in wanting pleasure and not wanting pain. It's certainly not very still, and in my experience, it's not very content. So the Dharma door for pleasure and pain is, I feel like I want to do a drum roll, mindfulness. Yay! Yay for mindfulness. Now, mindfulness in Buddhism is, it's got many facets and depths, and Buddhism's got a lot to say about mindfulness. For this talk, I'm going to go with what Jon Kabat-Zinn defines mindfulness as. He's an American Buddhist. He's done a lot of work with people in chronic pain in particular. He says that mindfulness is the awareness that emerges through paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally, to things as they are. I'm going to read that again. Mindfulness is the awareness that emerges through paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally, to things as they are. So in experiencing pleasure, if we can be mindful, Bansi, again in Know Your Mind, says it's, we can enjoy an experience without necessarily wanting to repeat it. And I was thinking about this, and often on retreat, you're in silence, and often you eat in silence, you have meals in silence. And what I notice is, because I'm not chatting away, I can be much more mindful of the experience of eating, so I can really taste the food in my mouth, I can be aware of my surroundings. And what tends to happen when I'm mindfully eating is I realize I'm full much quicker than I would normally do, and I can quite easily stop eating. If I come home after a busy day and I kind of eat unmindfully, I can easily eat a whole plate without necessarily even tasting it that much and go for another, thinking I'm still full, still hungry. So I think there is something about really being present with the sensations, you become more aware of the fact that pleasure doesn't last. Actually, food, once you start to get full, food doesn't taste as good. If you're being really mindful, you can experience that. Actually, this doesn't taste so nice now. I can stop. And I'd say, would you want pleasure to go on and on and on? We can only take so much pleasure before our experience changes, maybe to pain or to boredom. There's something about accepting the transitory nature of pleasure, the impermanent nature of pleasure, that's the key to really being able to enjoy it for what it is. With pain, if we're mindful, we can do the shockingly counterintuitive, quite radical thing of turning towards a painful experience with interest, curiosity, and a degree of loving kindness. If we're mindful, we can become aware of the storylines we tell ourselves. Crucially, we can become aware of them non-judgmentally. And we might find that our pain that we thought we knew so well, we thought we knew what it was, it changes. Subtleties, even chronic physical pain, changes all the time on close examination. Now, an important point to make here is that Buddhism doesn't advocate suffering for suffering's sake. In the case of physical pain and indeed emotional pain, it is wise to do what you can to alleviate it. Taking medicines, changing your lifestyle, whatever that may involve. But even with all of that, we're still going to experience levels of pain. So mindfulness gives us a bit of perspective, a bit of space around the experience to maybe do something different from our usual reaction, a more creative response to our habitual blocking or distracting. And what might a more creative response look like? And in a way, we all have to explore this for ourselves and find out what that might be. Find more sustaining alternatives, possibly. So when pain arises, just the actual turning toward it, as I said, it's quite a radical thing to do. Just taking a few breaths, coming into really feeling bodily sensations, can just give us a bit of space and give us a bit of perspective. Maybe we'll choose to do something other than reach for the chocolate or stop an argument. Or maybe we'll still have the same response, but we'll have it with some awareness. So maybe say we reach for the chocolate, but because we're doing it a bit more mindfully, we might enjoy the chocolate, or we might realise, actually, I didn't want the chocolate. I need something in my experience needs attention, actually. Something that I'm trying to block out needs more listening to. I've got here needs a bit of love. So over the years, like I say, I feel like I'm quite a master at distraction. I'd say my distractions have got less harmful in some ways. So smoking, drinking, a period of compulsive overeating, loads of iPlayer. These days I can still get into iPlayer, but it's a bit less. And actually, at the moment, I kind of find myself going to crosswords. Now, it's not that any of these things are wrong or bad in themselves. It's the mental state behind the behaviour that gives me the problems. It's the blind kind of compulsive running from my actual experience. It's obviously not doing a crossword, but doing, 5 crosswords in a row or something. That's when I know something's amiss. And also it's important to say mindful distraction from pain, especially if it's ongoing chronic pain, can be really important for us. If I'm experiencing some pain and I kind of breathe a bit, I'm kind of with it, and then I think, well, what do I want to do? I just want to curl up on the sofa and watch a dodgy rom-com or something. That's all right. It's more asking the question of what I want to do rather than a kind of mindless habitual response to my experience. And the thing is, you know, I know what really sustains me. I know what nourishes me. It's the Dharma. The Dharma, which means the teaching of the Buddha, the truth. Studying, listening to a talk, talking to a friend, connecting out rather than going in. I can get quite isolated in my pain avoidance. Practicing mindfulness and meditating are absolutely vital. And it's one thing to know these things, and it's another to actually put them into practice. My habits are strong, and it can take a huge effort for me to do something different. For me, I really need to reflect on the consequences of my actions. You know, if I watch loads of iPlayer, I will feel tired and unengaged with the world. The opposite is true if I do something more creative, in my experience. And I need friends to support me, gosh, I know that, and to develop big reserves of loving kindness for the many times that I will fall into old habits. I feel quite emotional. It's interesting you talked about faith when you introduced me. So I have faith in this practice. I can see how over the years I'm beginning to behave in more creative ways. I think my tree, this is just straightening out a little bit. It's like turning a plant to the light or something. An important note that I really want to make, again, I'm paraphrasing Bhante Sangharakshita and Know Your Mind here, but if you can cultivate real understanding that the desire to be rid of pain contributes to it and develop an equanimity to this, accept that pain is inherent in life and we will all experience it, that will cease the piling on of more suffering and doesn't necessarily mean the pain will go away. I know that sucks, actually. It totally sucks. And I realized after many years of second arrow thoughts for me along the lines of, I'm not practicing properly. If I were practicing properly, I wouldn't be depressed. If I were practicing properly, this pain would go away. But the reality is, you know, I'm a result of who knows how many conditions and different, different influences and things that have happened. And I mean, who knows? Some things we can change and some things we can't. But what I do know is that me thinking in this way, I'm not practicing properly, blah, 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 it's another arrow into the pain. Somehow learning to practice with no expectations of getting rid of anything is very important if we are to become whole, actually, to integrate all of our experience, to accept the whole of ourselves, you know, even the painful bit. And maybe especially the painful bits, with awareness, with loving kindness. My experience is actually the painful bits can have quite a lot to tell me. So, to sum up, pleasure and pain are inherent in our lives. We will all experience them. I put it to you, actually. Don't believe anything I say. the thing with Buddhist teaching is kind of there's this teaching, but then it's, well, go and explore it for yourself. What do you think? Do you think that that is the case? So pleasure and pain are inherent in our lives. We will all experience them. Avoiding pain, craving pleasure, both give rise to additional suffering. And mindfulness, being present with our actual experience, gives us a chance to work out gives us a chance to work with our habitual responses, to do something more creative if we wish to, that can alleviate the additional suffering and not necessarily the actual pain. And in a way we get a bit bigger. I think I can feel myself getting a bit bigger, a bit of a bigger perspective that helps me hold a bit more of my experience without being quite so buffeted about by the wanting and the not wanting, which takes up a lot of energy, actually. So practicing in this way is it's so much more than a self-help tool. practical. There's a lot of secular mindfulness around at the moment, and that's great, actually, and it's bringing a lot of relief to people. And mindfulness is so much more than that. Mindfulness points us to the truth of impermanence that is inherent in our world. And again, it's really important for us to explore that ourselves, because until we really know it at quite deeper and deeper levels, it's very difficult for us to engage with the truth of that. The more we investigate, the more we see things how things really are, we can transform our ignorance into wisdom. And I'm just going to end with a quote by Vishvapani, who's writing about the worldly winds. I found this on the buddhistcenter.com. Wisdom doesn't mean understanding something that is far away from our actual experience. It means finding a different way to perceive and engage with that experience. I'll read that again. Wisdom doesn't mean understanding something that is far away from our actual experience. It means finding a different way to perceive and engage with that experience. That's my talk. Thank you.